3 o'clock, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon for Wednesday, the 6th of June, the year 2012. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll be talking to Kelly Manning and Chris Taylor about campus community arts classes, campus community arts center classes. We'll also talk with three young women from the Caddo Nation about their canoe trip from Hunavadok Bay and their participation at Celebration. At Redder's Almanac, music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of showers. High temperatures around 47 degrees. Forecast for Thursday looks like showers with high temperatures around 57 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A tribe that planned to open a casino in northeast Oklahoma is asking a judge to allow it to develop at a different site. KGOU's Kurt Gortney has more.
The Kailigee tribal town is asking federal judge Gregory Fizell to change an injunction he issued on May 18th, barring the building on a site near Tulsa, Oklahoma. The tribe originally wanted to build a casino on the property, but objections by local residents, state officials, and the National Indian Gaming Commission helped to halt those plans. Now the tribal town wants to build a sports bar and music venue instead. Frizzell ruled the property belonged to two members of the Muscogee Creek Nation, not the Kailigee, but the tribe wrote in its motion Wednesday that the two members have since been enrolled as members of Kailigee Tribal Town. Last week, the National Indian Gaming Commission ruled the site is ineligible for gambling. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gortney.
A Massachusetts tribe says the federal government is moving forward with its application for land into trust. The Mashpee Wampanoag tribe says the Bureau of Indian Affairs has issued a notice to state and local governments regarding the tribe's application for an initial reservation in Mashpee and Taunton. The tribe is working to build a resort casino. The government notice includes a 30-day comment period. A group of Native American veterans on the Warm Springs Reservation held an event Wednesday. As KWSO's William Robbins reports, the event honoring veterans falls in line with tribal tradition.
Native American veterans and onlookers gathered in front of what is now the Warm Springs Courthouse to pay tribute to military veterans across the nation. Kirby Heath is the commander of the VFW Elliott Palmer Post 4217 in Warm Springs, Oregon. During yesterday's ceremony, he read from the document that established Memorial Day or Decoration Day.
They called this General Order Number 11. The 30th day of May, 1868, is designated for the purpose of strewing with flowers and otherwise decorating the graves of comrades who have died in defense of their country during the late rebellions and wars, and whose bodies now lie in almost every city, every village, and every hamlet and churchyard in the land.
Local elders attending the event explained that the ceremonies are appropriate to take place on the 30th rather than the national observance, which occurs on the last Monday in May. During the ceremonies, participating veterans unveiled a list of names of those local Native men who earned Purple Hearts. Commander Heath says the display has been kept in storage since 1992.
But all these veterans are your dads, your grandfathers, your uncles, or even your brothers. Some of these names you'll remember, but we're bringing out these names today so you can look upon them and touch them with your heart.
The ceremonies concluded with a 21-gun salute and a song to honor all military veterans past, present, and future. In Warm Springs, Oregon, I'm William Robbins.
Montana State University in Bozeman says it has a number of scholarships available to incoming Native students. Scholarships are open to students enrolled in a federally recognized tribe in Montana or members of the Little Shell Tribe of Chippewa. The deadline for application for several of the Native American scholarships is June 15th. On this day in 1796, the treaty with the Seven Nations of Canada was signed between First Nations and the United States. The treaty included the cession of lands to the state of New York and set aside reservation land for the Mohawks. In recent times, the St. Regis Mohawk tribe has sought claim over land and has disputed an area state and county asserted jurisdiction over. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:06 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. First two guests are new people at the Campus Community Arts Studio, Kelly Manning, and also Chris Taylor. Kelly is the new Executive Director and Chris is the Artistic Coordinator. First of all, welcome to the station today.
Thank you. Thanks for having us, Jeff.
And thank you for, and congratulations on your new positions.
Thank you.
Thanks, we're excited.
A little bit about your background, Kelly, please.
Well, I was born and raised here in Juneau and a lifelong Alaska resident. And I attended the University of Alaska, completed a bachelor's in English, went on to do a master's in teaching program for teaching English, at which point I decided I just needed to do more with art, so I went up to Fairbanks and did the master's in fine arts in poetry. So with that sort of teaching and art, I came back to Juneau and immediately connected up with the canvas. I was working in other places, but I really enjoyed the canvas. I would go and do pottery. I started teaching poetry, both community classes and with the canvas artists. And so over the course of the last 4 years, I've been peripherally involved with the canvas. I've been with Reach, the agency that Canvas is a part of, for the last 2 years. And when the Canvas director position opened up, I was asked if I would be interested in stepping into that position, and I gladly accepted. So now I'm with the Canvas full time.
For people who don't know, what is the Canvas according to you?
The Canvas is a community arts program that is the focus and mission is for creating an inclusive environment for people from the community and people who experience developmental disabilities to come together and create art and be involved in the art world.
Chris Taylor, how about you? Your background, please.
My background's a little bit different. I'm not a Juneau native. I'm from Colorado. Originally, I've been here for about a year and a half, or a little more, coming up on 2 years here. And from Colorado originally, kind of jumped around schooling. I got an undergraduate degree in art, painting and illustration primarily, out in Massachusetts. And then a graduate degree in San Francisco, and then lived in Denver for a while, ran a studio gallery there with my girlfriend Jackie Manning, Kelly's sister, which was awesome, and then moved up here about 2 years ago and started working at the Canvas right off of the bat, teaching classes with the community artists and also teaching our Canvas artists classes there, and kind of did the December show, this last December show, which was Painting with the Masters, which I thought turned out fantastic. Our artists did a great job with that. And with all the transition going on down there and Kelly moving up into Kendra's spot, Kendra invited me to step in and kind of support Kelly in her transition. So and that's kind of how I ended up in the spot at the Canvas, and excited to be there and love the people and been having a great time so far.
You both can answer this. What about the Canvas's mission appeals to you?
Well, I think, I really learned about the Canvas mission by being a part of it, and I think that's what I like about it. I think that having this community program that people get to come in and they're drawn in by the arts and the events that are going on, and they get to learn a lot about what the disabilities field is about and what people who experience disabilities lives are like, and learn through a really inviting and warm space. And it did that for me, and so I'm excited about being able to be a part of something that invites people in and makes people feel welcome and warm, and it's a real community space. So that's what the mission is really about, and I think that Canvas has been really successful in that. So I just want to continue offering people that opportunity to have that experience.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think community is the big word down at the Canvas, just bringing everyone together. I think so, like, kind of arts for everybody. You know, I mean, art is a great thing for everyone to come together around. I think that happens a lot down at the Canvas, and that's like the idea that at the Canvas community classes and also with our Canvas artists is that everybody has something to express, and the Canvas is a spot where anybody and everybody can come and express themselves through art and dance, music. I've got a lot of stuff that we're working on down there, so I kind of like the community aspect and just bringing everyone together through arts.
Indeed, thousands of people will come through the Canvas doorway learning how to do art, learning how to make art, and just seeing what a great place it is. Well, speaking of great places and great art, you got some classes coming up in the near future. It's not going on concurrently.
Yes, we do. We have...
talk about them?
You want to start, Kelly?
All right, I'll start. We have, coming up here in June, several classes that we wanted to highlight. Actually, starting tomorrow, we have a stained glass sun catchers class. We've had Joel Abbott teaching with us throughout the year. He's a wonderful instructor. And this is a great class for people that are maybe newer to stained glass, a smaller project that you can work on, get up on the wall. We also have costumed figure drawing with Avril Valise, and that's starting on June 16th, Saturday, June 16th.
And she's a fantastic illustrator. I think she has her work currently down at the City Museum that she's showing. Mm-hmm. So looking forward to that class kicking off.
Yeah.
It would be a good summer class.
Great opportunity. If you're interested in the class, you can go check it out and see what she does and see if that might be something that you'd be interested in learning about. She's an excellent instructor. We also have a beginning wheel throwing class beginning on June 10th, Sunday, June 10th. And we're really excited about, we have Sherry McDonald doing a book arts class. It's sort of the range of different kinds of bookmaking, range of techniques and styles for accordion books and sort of exploring more non-traditional bookmaking, but also some very, you know, classic bookmaking techniques. So that one should be really fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I'm hoping to actually see if I can get in on it. I've only met Sherry a few times, but I got to see her work, I think, last December at Annie Kale's, and fantastic work, I think very unique, and a good teacher. Be great to see. Crash that one.
And that starts on Tuesdays, beginning on June 12th. So that should be a really fun class coming up here pretty soon. Some of our classes we wanted to highlight for June. But we also have a bunch of kids programming. Summertime, we really try to draw the kids in when they're out of school, get them into some of our classes. So, Chris, you want to talk a little bit about our kids' classes?
Coming up we have the Kids Wearable Arts Workshop with Amanda Wade, and that one will be starting June 16th through July 7th, so it's a four-week class starting 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Just a great class for kids getting together and kind of reassembling clothes into maybe some more fun and funky stuff than that they can find at Freddy's. So I think that could be a pretty fun class. And what else do we have coming up?
For July, we've got a lot of opportunities that we'll be hitting in July, so maybe longer, like week-long workshop kinds of things,
mm-hmm.
Starting with...
We have another one with Avril,
yeah.
Heroes and Villains. Again, she's a great illustrator. It's going to be kind of a class that sets up a narrative. The kids will set up their own individual narrative and create their own kind of heroes and villains or characters that will interact in that space, and I think that's going to be drawing... and collage-based, if I remember correctly. So that should be kind of a fun kids class for kids that are into comic books and that sort of narrative art would be great. And I'll let Kelly talk about this next one because it's going to be taught by her.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing we're calling it decorative papier-mâché masks, but it's really inspired by doing, like, using yarn and gluing yarn into designs on a mask that you've built out of papier-mâché. We'll explore different shape masks, playing with different ways of creating expressive faces and then using the decorative arts to make it your own and bring your color sort of style to it. I've done that class before. It's been really fun, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm also going to be doing, that'll be a week workshop too, and then I'll be following up with a Magic Realist kids writing workshop. Magic realism is one of the sort of genres that always really appealed to me, so I just want to share my passion for that with kids and explore different ways that you can play with that genre in writing, and really jump into, you know, ghosts walking into the room and having conversations with, you know, the family at the table, stuff like that. So lots of ideas that you can go from there, but I'm really looking forward to those opportunities to work with the kids in the community again.
Yeah, that's going to be a great class. We were just brainstorming for the write-up for this class, and just in the brainstorming, Kelly was, she's a great poet, great writer, and she's coming up with some pretty interesting visuals and explained a lot about magical realism, which I didn't know much about. So I think it should be a fun class.
For the listeners who aren't aware of what magical realism is, could you give it a quick definition?
Yeah, I think that the key thing is to sort of distinguish it, I think, for people from like fantasy. It's really more about the sort of magical things that happen in the world that we live in. And the genre really comes from Latin American writing. It's very common there. It's also really common in a lot of American Native writing, Alaska Native writing, actually, as well. And it's about things that, you know, the sort of expression of the things that we experience and the things that we can't explain, and writing and exploring those in narrative. What are those things that are really magical in the world that happen around us all the time, and bringing that into a narrative and making that a part of the real, and real, you know, stories about real events or stories about that, you know, that are really based in our world, but explore the magic of that world.
And this workshop is coming up when?
This will be July 24th to 26th. It'll be Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday in the mornings.
You stay busy even when the sun shines.
Yes. it's our busy time with
definitely
kids especially.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I've been talking to Kelly Manning and Chris Taylor about the Canvas Community Art Studio. If people need more information about it, the phone number is?
586-1750, and we're right downtown, 223 Seward Street. Can't miss our big windows and sign out on the street.
I hope to see you down there.
Your website?
Yes, it's www.canvasarts.org.
All right, anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
One last thing. We this coming Saturday and then again on the 30th, we're hosting a Discovery Southeast event. It's for their Parade of Species parade costume making. They're going to be doing a Parade of Species float, and so we're inviting community members to come with kids and make costumes to participate in the Parade of Species float.
And I believe that event's free, is that correct?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So it's just a free, fun event for people to come down and
yeah. We're just hosting them at the Canvas. So, and that's from 10 to 1, Saturday, June 9th, and then again on Saturday, June 30th.
All right, Kelly and Chris, thank you so much for coming down. Don't make strangers of yourself, please.
Thank you, Jeff.
Will not. Thank you.
Let him hold out his hand. Let him touch you and watch what happens.
Want someone who can look in your eyes and see into your heart. Let him find you and watch what happens. Cold. No, I won't believe your heart is cold.
Just afraid to be broken again. So grab someone with a deep love to give.
Give that deep love to you.
And what magic you'll see.
Let someone give his heart.
Someone who cares like me.
with a deep love to give.
Give that deep love to you,
and what magic you'll see.
Let someone give his heart,
someone who cares like me.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 7th of June, 2012. It's the birthday of the linguist, best-selling author Deborah Tannen, born Brooklyn, 1945. Studied linguistics, wrote a book, You Just Don't Understand, Women and Men in Conversation, which was on the bestseller list for almost 4 years. It's the 60th birthday of the Turkish novelist Orhan Pamuk, born in Istanbul, 1952, studied architecture, journalism, at 23 decided to become a novelist, lived with his mother, wrote full-time, and 7 years later published his first novel. He's worked as a novelist for 30 years, and aside from 3 years he spent in New York, he's lived his entire life in the Istanbul district of his birth. In 2005, Orhan Pamuk gave an interview in which he talked about the Armenian genocide and the mass killing of tens of thousands of Kurds. He said, 30,000 Kurds have been killed here and 1 million Armenians, and almost nobody dares to mention that, so I do. Whereupon criminal charges were filed against Pamuk in Turkey, and Parliament passed a law making it illegal to make anti-Turkish remarks. There was a great outcry. Many authors, including Gabriel Garcia Marquez, Umberto Eco, John Updike, Günter Grass, spoke in Pamuk's defense, and the charges were dropped early in 2006. His most recent books include The Naive and Sentimental Novelist and Pieces from the View, Life, Streets, Literature. And it's the birthday of Louise Erdrich, born in Little Falls, Minnesota, 1954, grew up in Wahpeton, North Dakota, oldest of 7 children. Father came from a family of German immigrants, her mother, French Ojibwe. Both her parents taught in an Indian school. Louise Erdrich said, "My father used to give me a nickel for every story I wrote, and my mother wove strips of construction paper together and stapled them into book covers, so at an early age I felt myself to be a published author, earning substantial royalties." She went on to Dartmouth in the first class that admitted women, wrote poetry, supported herself as a farm laborer, lifeguard, a flag girl on a road construction crew. She came out with a book of poetry, Jack Light, then started writing fiction. And her first novel, Love Medicine, 1984, was a bestseller and won the National Book Critics Circle Award. Her book, The Roundhouse, is due out later this year. Here's a poem for today by Alden Nowlin, entitled The Old Gentleman. "If you want to ask a question," the chairman said, "begin by giving us your name and address." So the old gentleman, seated near the back of the auditorium, when it came his turn, said he was Louis Saint Laurent and came from Quebec, and we all of us laughed because that's who he was, and it was the kind of little joke one expected of an elderly former prime minister. But the next time, he said the same thing, and the time after that, said it quite simply, and it became obvious it wasn't meant to be funny, wasn't meant to be anything other than courteous, like his holding open the door for whoever happened to reach it at the same time he did, and never lighting a cigarette without offering the pack to the person in front and the person behind and the person seated on either side of him. The Old Gentleman by Alden Nowlin from his selected poems, published by House of Anansi Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. And by Reputation.com, helping professionals and businesses manage their reputations online, because search results can be the new first impression. Learn more at Reputation.com. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You know me. I'm a wife, a mom, an artist. I also struggle with debilitating depression. For many, the stigma associated with the illness is as challenging as the illness itself. Thankfully, mental illness can be managed through medication and therapy. Treatment works and recovery happens. If you or someone you know needs help, take the first step.
To find help, call 211. This message brought to you by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority.
Time is 3:26 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guests are three young women from the Caddo Nation in Oklahoma area. They're performing in celebration and they've just arrived after a canoe trip from Hoonadock Bay. First of all, congratulations for your epic journey.
Thank you.
Could you please introduce yourselves?
My name is Corey Robbins. I am Caddo, Hasine Band, Edge Family. I am also adopted Tlingit. I am Kagwantan of the Box House, and my Tlingit name is Kuwe.
Hello, my name is Kira Poole. I am also of the Caddo Nation, the Hasine Band, the Beaver Family. My Caddo name is Munhayan.
And I'm Elena Poole of the Caddo Nation. I also come from the Hasine Band, and my family is Beaver. I'm also the Johnson O'Malley representative for Oklahoma City Public Schools.
And where are you here in Alaska?
We're here in Alaska to participate in celebration, but also to be in part of a cultural exchange between the Caddo Nation and the Tlingit Nation as well, learning about our brother's heritage, because we're here visiting celebration with our brother, Morgan Fawcett.
Tell me about the Caddo Nation, please.
The Caddo Nation was relocated to Oklahoma, but they were originally from the Louisiana area of the world.
What are the celebrations like in that part of the world?
Celebrations in that part of the world are not much different from Native American celebrations in this region of the United States. There's lots of dancing, singing, eating, gifting to each other, and honoring ancestors.
Tell me about the canoe you just got back from Hoonadock Bay. What a trip.
The canoe itself was a traditional wooden canoe of cedar, and it was very long. It seated about 15 people in our case.
But how long was the journey?
The journey was very long, it seemed. It was almost 200 miles in the ocean.
What about overnight? Did you camp out overnight?
Yeah, we camped out twice, once in Funter Bay, and the second time on Portland Island.
And you left on Monday?
Monday?
Yeah.
Yes.
Cool. How long did you row before taking a break?
We rowed each day about 8 hours.
And what did you do when you were rowing?
While we were rowing, we passed the time by singing Tlingit rowing songs, and each song is thousands of years old. It was They're all very beautiful.
How different was it from what you imagined it to be?
The journey, I imagined it to be very, very difficult and strenuous, and it was, but I didn't expect it to be as much fun as it ended up being. It was really a great experience being able to make new friends with the crew and just have fun.
I'm going to ask each of you to share your reflections on some of the highlights of the trip. You might as well start since you're near the microphone.
Okay. One of the highlights of the trip, I have to say, is being in the ocean. There was a pod of killer whales that came up and swam up alongside our canoe for a little while, and that was just an amazing sight to see.
I would have to say that, also have to say that some of the highlights had to do with wildlife, but also we camped out in some beautiful places. That was very nice, and I appreciated the company of my crew.
I would have to say the highlight for me was the bonding with our fellow canoe members and our journey members, and when we would camp out, we'd get a big fire going, and we'd all sit around it and sing and talk to each other, and it was lots of fun.
Would you do it again?
Absolutely.
Definitely.
And
yeah.
You're here to take part in Celebration. What are you going to be doing with Celebration?
In Celebration, we will be singing and dancing in our Caddo Nation dance troupe at Centennial Hall.
And what else are you going to be doing? What else do you have planned?
Just going to workshops and seeing what there is to see and meeting new people.
And the parade. Just learning about the Tlingit culture in general.
Morgan Fawcett is also in the studio. Morgan, I'm going to ask you to step up to the microphone, please, if you could. Welcome back to the studio here. It's nice to see you again.
Good to see you too, Jeff.
So for you, how was the canoe journey?
It was absolutely fabulous. I participated 4 years ago, and it's just as undescribable in words as it was last time.
Highlights?
Highlights for me, like the girls said, it was absolutely awesome being able to bond with the other paddlers. That in and of itself was great, because what we were really doing is we were creating unity, coming together and working as one. Even though we had 15 people in the canoe, 14 paddles in the water, we were all working together. And if we weren't able to work together, then we wouldn't have gotten anywhere. And I have to say, the highlight for me was the second day. First day out on the water was like glass. It was beautiful. But the second day, it started raining and the water was a little choppy. And we really all had to work together. We had to work together to make it through. And having that ability to come together at not as many paddles, but as one paddle was beautiful.
Did you bring your flutes with you?
I didn't bring my flutes with me. I expected this to be just the girls, so I'm completely unprepared.
But on the canoe trip itself, did you bring your flutes?
No, I didn't take any of my flutes. Last journey, I took my very first flute, and it wound up in the water, and it didn't play for a couple of days as it dried out, so I was a little leery about bringing any of my instruments with me, though I regretted it once we hit beach, and everybody's like, hey, did you bring your flute? So, you know, there you go.
Tell me a little bit about your visit with President Obama.
Well, on December 1st, I was invited to the White House as a champion of change for President Obama's Winning the Future initiative. I was there with 11 other indigenous youth from all over the nation, as far as Hawaii, and it was absolutely awesome to come together with 10 other people that were community-driven. The point of Champions of Change is to honor and recognize people who are helping their community. So it was great to come together with other youth that had the same mindset as myself, who want to improve their community. And we were there during a time where the White House was sponsoring a Native Leaderships Conference. And I got to meet President Obama before he addressed all the federally recognized tribes and the leaders that were present.
You've been diagnosed with FASD. How's that changed your life?
Well, receiving my diagnosis for FAS and FASD is absolutely amazing. It's really helped me as an individual know where my strengths and weaknesses are. And because I can identify my strengths and I can identify my weaknesses, I know where my boundaries are, and it's also allowed me to go out into the public, go into high schools, middle schools, colleges, and talk about how alcohol has affected my life so that I can help prevent another child being born with FASD.
What's the most common question you get asked?
Well, I think one of the most common questions would have to be, there's so many. One of the big things that I'd like people to understand, first off, foremost, any amount of alcohol can cause brain damage. A lot of people say that when they quit as soon as they found out they were pregnant. The thing about alcohol is any amount of alcohol will cause damage. But on the other hand, I also try to stress the fact that no one is a guilty party when it comes to drinking during pregnancy. We are all hurt. We're all victims. So we can't be angry with the mothers that drink during pregnancy, because many don't know, because they aren't able to stop drinking on their own. So that's one of the biggest fallacies, is that people are often angry with birth mothers who drank during pregnancy.
What's coming up in the near future for you? After celebration, you're going to be dancing with these young women, I understand?
Yes, I'll be participating in celebration. After this, we're going to go down south. We're going to drive up through Canada. We're going to hang out. We're going to participate in the Paddle to Squaxin, another canoe journey down south. And all the while, I'm going to be taking college courses. And I also have some speaking engagements between now and when we start paddling.
What have they asked you to speak about?
Well, I'm going to be down south in San Diego and another mental health conference, and I'll be sharing my story, how FASD has affected my life, how my family and I have overcome my own disabilities, and how we all work together so that we can all be successful.
You certainly are an inspiration.
Oh, thank you, Jeff.
Tell me a little bit about your flute playing and how it's changed over the years.
Well, when I first began playing the flute, I like to tell people this, I played with a passion. I have two modes, I have stop and I have go. So when I started playing, I played all the time. Any spare moment I had, I played my flute. And then it kind of waned off a little bit after about 6 months. And then I started to acquire new flutes. And that is an absolutely wonderful experience. I was able to meet other flute makers, other flute players, and develop my style. And over the years, I've recorded 4 CDs now, I can say. 3 have been released. The 4th is on its way. I've recorded Ancestral Memories, which is my first CD. Excuse me. Tears of Our Father, my 2nd. Legacy is my 3rd and most latest CD. And I've got a 4th on the way, which is untitled, and I'm working on getting that released in the near future.
And you just recorded that this last week at Studio A.
Yes, I did. I love to come back here to Juneau to record. I always feel inspired. I haven't been in Juneau yet for a recording that I haven't had to fill in the gap and create songs to augment what I already have. So it's great to come home, compose some new music, and lay it down on a CD.
Your flute songs being instrumentals, what kind of story do they tell?
Well, for me, they represent a particular feeling at a particular time. The story is my own, but it's also yours and anybody that listens. It's completely up to your interpretation, how you feel and how you interpret the music that I'm playing.
Are you going to be playing informally or formally at Celebration?
Oh, I won't be playing formally. I have gotten a lot of requests from everybody that I know to play, so I might be playing out in the park or out and around when I have free time.
Do you have a website?
I do have a website. You can go to www.morganfawcett, morganfawcett.vpweb.com.
I'm sure just Google Morgan Fawcett would be easier to do.
It would certainly be easier, and that's what we would advise.
All right, Morgan Fawcett, thank you for coming down, and thank you, young women from the Caddo Nation. Thank you for coming down. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I can't think of anything. How about you girls?
No.
No? Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Marion Call. I'll be performing at the Goldtown Theater at 7 p.m. on June 13th as the final performance in this season's KRNN Spotlight Series. Join me and Kate Burkhart for a candid interview, and then I'll perform a concert of original Alaskan folk music with my father, Paul Pugh, on guitar. Tickets are at the station, at the door, and at KRNN.org, where you'll also find links to listen to my music. Again, that's June 13th, 7 p.m. at the Goldtown Theater.
The oranges and she got us the rotten and rusty door hinges. Squealed as he left. How remarkably deadly, how utterly thoroughly he'd failed to confess. He'd evaded the point and eluded the mood she meant to convey when she laid out the food. Even put up her hair, but the boy wouldn't bite, and it was almost sexy, but not quite. But how could she fret when she'd won that small bet with a well-meaning friend who had sworn it would end with a kiss and a cry and a happy reveal? For what man could resist such a gem of a meal? She'd collect on the cash, but her victory stung. She cursed at the cat that had captured her tongue. She broke out the chocolate and started to write, and it was almost helpful, but not quite. Dear sir, I've been dropping hints like bricks. Remember the fete where the two of us met, less a bolt from the blue, more social ineptness. The cool kids swarmed, you clung to the corner. That's how my poor heart before I could warn her. Broke from the bunch to bolt to your side. The rest of me followed a bit starry-eyed. And you took off your hat and you bought me some wine. And it was almost awkward, but not quite. Well, we had not so much for big parties and such. We'd rather observe than be part of the crush. So you uncapped your camera to frame the good times. I had to use napkin to scribble some lines. And the chemistry swept us both off our toes. You shot no one else, I couldn't compose. And you said I was sweet, nearly kissed me goodnight. And it was almost perfect, but not quite. Oh, dear sir, you've been dropping hints like bombs. Dear sir, I am dropping my last guard for you.
I'm fearful and I'm foolish and I'm agitated too. But all this anticipation without consummation, it's hard on a poor girl's pride. And though I doubt I'll send this letter, if I did, you'd see.
Be performing live in concert on Wednesday, June 13th at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater as part of the KRNN series of performances. Get your tickets by going to krnn.org.
Today, 360 North takes a break from our regular Thursday programming to bring you live coverage of Celebration 2012. From 9 a.m. and continuing late into the evening, the biennial festival of Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian tribal members, organized by Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, is a fabulous showcase of Southeast Alaska Native traditions and performance. You won't want to miss it. It's day one of Celebration 2012, today and tonight on 360 North. Watch the web stream at 360north.org.
Hey kids and parents, what's your favorite Southeast Alaska species? Is it a brown bear? Is it a raven? Maybe even a jellyfish. Discovery Southeast is hosting the second annual Parade of Species in the 4th of July parade. Come dressed as your favorite animal, plant, or fungus and march with us. We'll be having workshops on June 9th and 30th at the Canvas to help you make your costume. Find out more at discoverysoutheast.org.
Time is 3:47, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. We get back to the Mudroom's Vault of Archives. Here's another performance by... I'll let Amanda Compton introduce him.
Our next speaker is Carolyn Bergstrom. Carolyn was born in San Diego, California, and she was raised in Phoenix, Arizona. After escaping the Lower 48 and a long stint chasing fish around as a graduate student in British Columbia, she moved to Juneau now 3.5 years ago for a research job as a biologist. She likes growing food, stained glass windows, unusual people, spicy curries, and rock and roll. She never planned on staying in Juneau for more than a year and would like to tell you why she stayed, but in the spirit of today's theme, isn't going to, because it's a secret. Carolyn Bergstrom.
Hi, everybody. So I'm a biologist, and I teach biology here at the university, and I do a little bit of field biology in the summers. And too quiet? Is that better? Okay, I tend to yell when I give talks, so let me know if it gets too loud, because I don't want to. Anyway, so I never would have thought when I was growing up as a kid that I would have ended up being a field biologist in Alaska, because I grew up in Phoenix, and I was a total child of the suburbs, right? Like, I was the epitome of the city girl. And I was a teenager in the late 80s, and spent a lot of my time riding around in Trans Ams and rocking out to Def Leppard and playing Dungeons and Dragons, and I had a perm, you know, like, it was a city girl. And so when I think about it now, like how I got from there to here, being a field biologist in Alaska, it's even becoming, like, with every year, it's becoming more and more of a secret how that happened even to me. Some people, you know, maybe you're one of them, but when you're a kid, some people know right away what they're going to do. You know, they're like, oh, I'm going to be an architect or a car mechanic or something, and they just go straight there, right? Well, that's not really my deal. That's not what I did at all. I did a bunch of switchbacks and changed my mind a bunch of times and made a bunch of mistakes, and my path kind of looked like more like a bunch of curly cues and stuff, you know, but so here I am. But one stop along the way from there to here for sure was going to graduate school. And I went to graduate school on Vancouver Island in British Columbia. And I had this major advisor in graduate school. It's like effectively my boss. And he was a real bear. He was like a psychotic, workaholic, control freak maniac, right? And he was super hard on everybody who worked for him. But I respected him. I kind of revered him, actually. But I was just completely terrified of him at the same time. And so that was a trip to deal with. And then at the same time, I started dating who became, at the time, my longtime partner, my long-term boyfriend. And he wrote me a poem when we first started dating that said, "Roses are red, violets are blue, may the itty-bitty fishes let their secrets for you." And I thought that was pretty cool, you know, and it sort of summed up my attitude at the time of being like a newbie grad student, overconfident, and thought that I could solve all the secrets of nature and the fish that I studied. So one of my first jobs in graduate school was to go up to the Queen Charlotte Islands in BC and hike out, 2 days hike into the bog to this one lake that has these little teeny itty-bitty fishes in it, and collect 50 of them alive and then bring them back to Victoria and make them swim and measure how they swim. And I could only go to this one lake out in the middle of nowhere on the Queen Charlotte Islands because these fish were extraordinary and there wasn't anything like them anywhere else in the world. And so I packed up my boyfriend and my dog and my 1983 Sentra and went to the Charlottes and hiked 2 days through the bog and collected the fish. And I had to return them alive, right? Like that's alive, underline alive. And so I had to put them in the tank in the little pack, and we hiked them out 2 days in the bog and then drove onto the ferries, 8-hour ferry ride to the mainland, and then a 1,000-mile drive, because I didn't have any money to fly, 1,000-mile drive back to Victoria, keeping these fish alive in a rubber tub in the backseat of my 1983 Nissan Sentra. And so as we're driving, like every mile, they became more and more valuable, you know, and so, and I was obsessed, and my poor boyfriend, I was obsessed, and like every couple hours we'd pull over and I would feed them, make sure they had enough oxygen, you know, and baby them, and they were doing great, they were all doing really well, and we made it all the way back down to Whistler, 1,000-mile drive, right, and we were on this highway, it's like a bunch of switchbacks and Winnebagos and two lanes in the mountains. It's just like dizzying. It's sort of like my career path a little bit. And we got stuck behind this Winnebago and couldn't pass him. It was taking forever. We were going to miss the ferry and stuff. And so Chris, he passed him and did this like super acceleration and then swerved back into the right lane, you know, to avoid a head-on collision. And when he did that, the whole tub of fish spilled over in the back seat. And so at this point, like my personal investment in each individual little fish was about $5,000 for each little fish, you know. And I thought if they died, I was just going to get fired and I was going to die or something. And so I screamed and we pulled over and I jumped out and I opened up the back seat and the water swooshes out and all the fish swoosh out with them. And it's in the summer, so they're like flopping on the asphalt in the highway. And they're like in between the cushions, the back seat of my car, and they're on my dog. I'm like, we're picking fish out between my dog's toes. And I managed to salvage about 2 gallons of water. We put all 50 fish in 2 gallons of water, which is not very much water for 50 fish. And we just kept going. And we made it back to Victoria. I went to the lab, and I set them up in a tank, and, you know, not one of those little fish died. Not one little fish. Well, I found one between the cushions of my car 2 months later. But that was the only one that died, right? It was incredible. And so I had to make this decision at the time whether I was going to tell this secret of what happened to my boss, who I was terrified of. And I decided not to. I decided to just not tell him anything. And so I did the experiment, and it worked, right? And I solved this little secret of the fishes, and I published it. And it got published in a journal, right? And I was like, phew, that was close, you know. And so the day that the article came out and they told me it got published, I decided to go ahead and tell my crazy boss the story. So I mustered up all my courage, and I sat down, and I was like, "Tom, this is what happened," and I told him. And he just paused, and then he looked at me, and he nodded, and he said, "Well done." And I was so relieved, you know, like, have you ever seen the movie Babe about the pig that chases the sheep around? And at the end of the movie, he wins the day, saves the day, and he chases all the sheep around, and he wins the herding competition, and his human owner looks down at him at the end, you know that part, and looks at him, and he says, "Well done, pig." And I sort of felt like that, you know, it kind of summed up the nature of our relationship as well, but... But anyway, so it all worked out, you know, and I got the paper published, and the fish didn't die, and I didn't get fired, and But you know, one thing I never was able to figure out, one secret that has continued to be hidden from me, is how those fish survived that 1,000-mile trip in the backseat of a Nissan Sentra and being spilled out on the highway in between my dog's toes. It's just incredible that they could survive that, and I've never been able to figure that out. And it's like one of the cool things about being a biologist, one of the cool things about observing and admiring nature is that for every little secret that gets exposed, there's a whole bunch of other ones that get brought to the forefront that we'll never be able to figure out. And personally, I think that's the best way for it to be. But that's it. I'm done. That's my story.
Helen Bergstrom recorded live as one of the Mudroom presentations. Thanks to Mark Wheeler and Amanda Compton for providing those tapes. Listening to the CD Monks of the Desert. Time is 3:57 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Switzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT Sarasuna at 91.9. An excursion inland in Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9, or also live online at www.ktoo.org. Tomorrow, 3 on a Juno afternoon, Pat Moore will be your host. He'll talk with Kyle Pickett and Ron Moss about this Saturday's Juno Symphony Pops concert with the Thunder Mountain Big Band. We'll also talk to Ralph Steves about touring the Ted Stevens Marine Research Facility. And Nancy DeTourney will give us a rundown on art happenings in the capital city during Arts Up. That Writer's Almanac, music and more tomorrow at 3 on a Juno afternoon. The forecast for tonight, numerous rain showers later on with low temperatures around 46 degrees, northwest winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. Forecast for Thursday, rain showers, high temperatures 55 to 62 degrees. Thursday night, more showers with low temperatures around 48 degrees. And Friday, mostly cloudy skies with scattered showers and high temperatures around 58 degrees. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning in to Juno afternoon. If you'd like to be a guest on it, please give me a call. Phone number is 463-6425. My name is Jeff Brown. Thank you for listening.
Ave Maria, Ave Mitis, Ave Maria, Ave. Speaker John Boehner countered by saying he thinks the cuts, which expire at year's end, should continue.
Extending all of the current tax rates for at least a year is really important if we're going to help job creators gain a little more confidence and put Americans back to work.
Tough talk from the White House comes after former President Bill Clinton caused a political firestorm by also suggesting the tax cuts for all income levels be extended through 2013. A new law allowing gay marriage in Washington state has been blocked from taking effect this summer. NPR's Martin Costi reports a signature drive has put the issue on the November ballot.
Washington state already has a broad civil unions law, but with the urging of the Democratic governor, Chris Gregoire, the legislature passed formal gay marriage this spring.